Well, this is another bonus episode, by which I mean one that I was not intending to release really until just this morning. But it's something that I'd been thinking about for at least a week or so, the need for unity. And is that even possible here in the United States? Now, let me start with a little story. My oldest son, Micah, who is almost 16 now, hard to believe, was in sixth grade during the 2016 election between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And you may recall that it was a very contentious election. Of course, wanting to be a good citizen, I did my best to keep up with what was happening. And so my son, Micah, would sometimes watch the news with me, and he would ask questions. And apparently, he would talk at school sometimes about his thoughts on the election, which is great. During one of the school's open houses, when we went and met with his teachers, one of his teachers asked me, "Who's the politically savvy one in your house?" And I kind of chuckled and I said, "Well, I don't know if I would call myself politically savvy, but, you know, we watch the news and then we talk about it." Well, I don't know if I'd call myself politically savvy, but, you know, we watch the news and then we talk about it. I still would not consider myself politically savvy, which is why I don't do a political podcast. And while this episode does deal with the state of politics in America, I'm really not going to be talking about politics. What I want to talk about is the division and the divisiveness that we are experiencing in America, and in some ways, the inhumanity that we see so much of today. How do we overcome that? How can we become, as many are calling us to become, more united? It has to do, at least in part, with the fact that we tend to thingify or objectify each other. We ignore the fact that every person is a human being, that every person has a story, that every person has hopes and fears. And instead, we tend to dehumanize and demonize each other. I wrote a book about a year ago called Beyond Thingification because I noticed that in some ways we do this in our churches too. And we need to get beyond that, beyond thingifying each other. And we need to start humanizing each other. And if you want to know more about the book, you can find out more on my website, marcuswatson.com/book. But right now, what I want to do is I want to dig into how we might begin to rebuild the United States and restore our unity as a people. I'm Marcus Watson, and this is episode 93 of Spiritual Life and Leadership. Well, I'm going to state the obvious, and that is that America is terribly polarized today. I came across an article with some research from Pew Research, which shows the growing division over the past 20 years or so, division between Democrat and Republican. I won't cite all of the statistics right now. I will include a link in the show notes, or if you want to, you can just Google the words political polarization in the American public. That's the title of the article. You can find it online. But here's the interesting thing. This article was from 2014, right about 7 years ago. And we know from experience that the divide is even greater today than it was in 2014. Right? And so it's clear, right? We need unity. We need it. And everyone is calling for it. Joe Biden is calling for unity. Donald Trump called for unity in his last recorded message to the country. This is a quote from his statement. He said, "Now more than ever, we need to unify around our shared values." I agree. And we all do, 100%. We know we need it. The question is it even possible? And I want to say up front that yes, I think it is possible. Why? Well, because Jesus said that things that seem impossible for human beings are possible with God. And I think that if the people of God make a decision to work toward unity, trusting God as we do so, we can bring an end to America's dysfunctional division and divisiveness. So let's talk about unity. Let me start by talking about what unity is not. Unity is not uniformity, right? Uniformity means everyone believes everything exactly the same. And I don't even think that's possible for human beings. Human beings cannot be perfectly uniform with each other because we all come to the world with different experiences, right? And those different experiences shape our worldviews, and those different worldviews shape our beliefs, and those different beliefs shape the things that we do in the world, right? We'll never have perfect uniformity, but thankfully, that's not what unity is, right? Unity does not mean all Americans need to become Democrats or all Americans need to become Republicans. And I would say that uniformity is probably even worse than division. At least when there's some difference of opinion, you can bring different creative ideas to the table. If you've got uniformity, you lose the creativity, right? You lose the fruitfulness that can come out of a vigorous debate. And it's not helpful to the world if America were to become complete uniform. We don't need uniformity. What we need is unity. Right, so let's talk about what unity is. One of the first things I thought about as I was thinking about, okay, what is unity? I thought about God, right? And here's why. Because God is, well, we call God a Trinity, right? But God is also a unity. God is three in one. Father, Son, and Spirit are different, but unified. Now, I realize that it's a little bit different with God. God is one person and somehow three persons, and they are united. God is united in God's self, right? In what God wants to do in the world. But we can see that there is some distinction in God. When Jesus was on the cross, right? Jesus cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? And there's some debate as to whether God actually forsook Jesus on the cross, but certainly I would say that there was a difference of perspective on what was happening in that moment. Jesus felt forsaken. The Son felt forsaken by the Father. In my opinion, I think the Father said, no, I'm here with you. It doesn't feel like I'm here, right? But there is unity in the diversity of the Trinity. I think we also have a good example of unity in diversity when we look at the church. Now, of course, there are a lot of churches that have a lot of dysfunction, and there is a lot of division within the church, no doubt about that. But I think there's some hope when we look at the church. There are a lot of different denominations, and those differences in a lot of ways do reflect our sin and our brokenness. Even so, generally speaking, there is a unity among the people of God, among people of different Christian traditions. We have some differences of theology. We have different practices, right? But there is a unity when it comes to what matters, right? And that's what we rally around as followers of Jesus, right? The love of God the Father, the death and resurrection of God the Son, the ongoing presence and power of the Holy Spirit, right? That's what matters. That's what's essential. And I thought about a famous statement usually attributed to St. Augustine that I think sums it up well. It says this: in essentials, unity; in doubtful matters, liberty; in all things, charity. I love that. Somehow, the church is able to maintain its unity in diversity because of this, right? Because unity has to do with focusing on what we have in common more than focusing on what we don't have in common. What if Americans could begin to do that? What if Americans could begin to say, you know, we don't agree on all the details of how to be the best America possible, but we can agree on this. We can agree that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are essential to who we are. And what if Americans gave each other permission to have different ideas on how to be, on how best to pursue those ideals? And what if Americans actually were charitable toward each other, right? Regardless of our political party, regardless of where we live, urban or rural, regardless of our skin color or our ethnic background or our religion or even our sexual orientation or whatever, right? What if we were charitable to each other? Is that even possible in America? Right? And if it is, how can we begin to rebuild unity? I want to give you some thoughts now on how I think we can begin to rebuild unity. A conservative friend of mine recently said, I don't even want unity with Joe Biden. And you know what? I get it. Because most liberals have for 4 years said, I don't want unity with Donald Trump, even when he called for it. And so I don't even think we need to start with unity. I think if we aim for unity, it's going to be like, you know, one of those goals that is so far out of reach, we say, why even bother? I don't think we should aim for unity. I think we need to start by aiming for civility. And I thought about this because I saw a conservative commentator this past week saying he didn't think unity was possible right now. And he said that he believed the more realistic aim is civility. And so let's just start with that. How can we be civil toward each other? You know what? Let's just start by being polite. All right, let's just start by treating each other the way we would want to be treated. That's the golden rule, right? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I was thinking about it like this. What if we treated our political adversaries, right, those that we disagree with, the way we treat the cashier at the grocery store? Now, hopefully you treat the cashier at the grocery store well, right? You don't have to be best friends, but just treat each other courteously, right? With kindness, with respect, with civility. And stop the name calling. Right? Liberals need to stop calling conservatives fascists and racists, recognizing, of course, that racism is not a conservative-only problem. It's not that there are no conservative racists. There are also liberal racists. But we need to stop the name-calling. And conservatives need to stop calling liberals socialists and snowflakes. Right? The sooner that we stop the name-calling, the sooner we can end our polarization, the sooner we can become a healthy society again. And we need to stop posting politically inflammatory articles and videos and comments on social media. Maybe just take a fast, right, from political commentary on social media. I don't know about you, but I hate that feeling when I read something that triggers me, you know, that I really disagree with politically. And I'm like, oh, what can I say to kind of jab that person back? Oh, that is so unhealthy. That is so unhealthy. When you feel that, and sometimes I fail at this, just move on to the next post, right? Let it go. Or maybe just put your phone down and do something else for a while. By the way, Lent is coming up. Maybe one of the things we need to do, can you imagine if all of us refrained from political engagement, at least like on social media, for the season of Lent? That might even make a dent. That might make a dent in our society. Okay, right? So we need to start with civility. The other thing that I was thinking about is that we need to start with friends and family. I heard a story, I've heard story after story, really, over the last few weeks of friends and families that have been estranged from each other. I saw a story over the past week of a 20-something girl whose mom had threatened to disown her if she participated in Black Lives Matter protests. And then, when this girl saw video of her parents participating in the insurrection on January 6th, which they had kept a secret from her, she turned her parents into the police. Ay, ay, ay. I mean, that is such a mess, isn't it? Listen, you don't have to immediately unify with Joe Biden or with Mitch McConnell. Just unify with those that you love. Right, just start by committing to re-engaging with your friends or family. And if you've been estranged from someone that you care about, just reach out to that person. Right? And if you need to apologize for words that maybe you've said, then do the hard thing and apologize. I know it's hard. I know it's humbling. But that's what we've been called to do as followers of Jesus. And you know what? Just be honest with them. Tell them that you don't want politics to get in the way of your relationship. And really, when I even say this, can you think of anything more ridiculous? That we would let our politics get in the way of our family relationships and our friendships. And if you apologize, if you tell them you don't want politics to get in the way, and if they're unwilling to respond mutually, then, you know, that's up to them. But you will have at least taken that first step toward healing our society's disunity. Maybe they will respond someday, right? Maybe it won't be today. Maybe it'll take some time. But I think they'll remember the fact that you reached out to them. All right, so start with civility. Start with friends and family. And then start by giving each other the benefit of the doubt. I was talking to a small group of folks a couple weeks ago, and one of them said this. I think Kamala, no, she didn't say I think. She just said, Kamala Harris wants to destroy America. And I said, do you really believe that? And they said, oh, yes. And I said, you know, I don't think any of our politicians want to destroy America. Right? They just have different ideas about how to make America a better place. Now, there may be some who really do want to do damage to certain groups within America. And when that becomes evident, then yes, we should work against that. But let's not start there. Let's not start by assuming that those with different political ideas want to destroy America. Right? Let's start by assuming the best in each other. Let's start by assuming that those that we disagree with have positive intent, that they actually do want to make the world a better place. Let's assume that those that we disagree with also have blind spots. You know, maybe conservatives are blind to the suffering of those who want to immigrate into the United States. Maybe liberals are blind to the struggles of small business owners who feel smothered by regulations and that make it harder for them to make a good living. Maybe we need to become aware of our own blind spots. And so maybe what we need is more dialogue so that we can begin to not only point out our counterparts' blind spots, but then really become aware of our own blind spots, right? There is a reason. We need to understand this. There is a reason why people believe what they believe. It's because everybody has a story. Right? Everyone has experiences that shape them. And so that leads to the next thing that we can do to start building unity in our country, in the United States. We need to listen to each other. I saw some tweets this morning from a pollster who is fed up with a lack of civil discourse. He posted some videos from a recent focus group that he was doing via Zoom. And time after time, the conversation devolved into shouting and name-calling. And this pollster said that he doesn't even want to do this work anymore because it's so futile, it felt to him, and painful. I can imagine it must be so hard to sit in these divisive and unhealthy conversations time after time after time. But what would happen if we truly began to listen to each other? I want to say something here. I don't know if it's 100% right, but this is what I think. I think that anger and violence is always rooted in pain. Now, maybe I should say is almost always rooted in pain, but I think in some form it's always rooted in pain. And so what if we could begin to understand the pain of those who engaged in Black Lives Matter protests last summer? And what if we could begin to understand the pain even of those who engaged in the insurrection? Right? Now, violence is never acceptable, not against local businesses and not against the U.S. Capitol. But in order to heal, we need to understand where the other is coming from, where those that we disagree with are coming from. And that can only happen if we begin to really listen to each other. And let me say this, not listen for the sake of being able to come up with a great comeback, but listen for the sake of understanding. Things will not change until we begin to listen with the intent to understand. All right, one last thing that I think we can do to begin to rebuild unity in the United States, and that is we need to pray for each other, right? It's kind of a no-brainer, isn't it? I was thinking of the Good Samaritan story when the lawyer asks Jesus, who is my neighbor, right? He's asking, really, who is not my neighbor so I don't have to love them? Right? Because the command is love your neighbor as yourself. So Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan. And you know the story. I'm not going to retell the whole story here. But it's the story of in which the Jewish lawyer's enemy, a Samaritan, ends up being the one who loves and cares for an injured and dying man. He is the neighbor. Right? Today, depending on who Jesus would be talking to, he might tell us the story of the good Trump supporter or the good Biden supporter. In this case, in the Good Samaritan story, Jesus actually ignores the lawyer's question, right? His question was, who is my neighbor? Jesus is basically saying, look, everyone is your neighbor, but what really matters is, are you being a neighbor, right? Even to those that you might consider an adversary. That's why Jesus asks the lawyer, who was a neighbor to the injured man? And the lawyer responds, well, the one who had pity on him, right? Not even wanting to say the Samaritan, because that was his adversary. Jesus says to him, go and do likewise. We are called to love even those that we think of as enemies and adversaries. We are called to love even Joe Biden and Donald Trump, right? Right. And Jesus makes it even clearer than that, right? He says, love your enemy, not just your neighbor, but also your enemy, and pray for those who persecute you. A lot of people feel persecuted these days, persecuted by politicians, but also persecuted by friends and family members. And Jesus says, pray for them. And prayer changes things. Prayer changes us. When we start to pray for a person, not pray that God will, you know, well, even change that person or get that person in some way, but pray for their well-being. Like God said through Jeremiah, pray for the well-being of the city into which I've carried you into exile, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. Pray with love, with positive intent for even those that you disagree with. Now, I don't think that any one person by themselves is going to restore unity in our society. This episode, right, this podcast episode by itself is not going to restore unity in our society. But here's what I believe. I believe that if enough of us start to do these little things, we can begin to restore unity. We can bring an end to the division and the divisiveness and the just unhealth of our society these days, right? If we start to treat each other with civility, if we start to re-engage lovingly with our friends and family, if we start to assume the best in each other, if we start to listen, really listen to each other, and if we start to pray for each other, then I think unity can be restored. It won't happen overnight. It might not even happen in a year. It might take years. It might take a couple of decades. Just like it took a couple of decades to get to where we are today, it might take a couple of decades to become a healthy society again. But I think it can happen, right? What is impossible with human beings is possible with God. And so I hope that you'll join me in just doing these little things that can begin to restore a healthy society, a united society, here in the United States, or if you're somewhere else, maybe in your country as well. I want to thank you for being here. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for being a part of what this podcast is all about. Restoring shalom in the world. Becoming healthy leaders on the inside so that we can be healthy leaders on the outside. Thank you so much for being here. And I will see you next time here on Spiritual Life and Leadership. Thank you.